And then the last one, number four, compassion arises spontaneously from recognizing or realizing. They use the phrase emptiness, but I've substituted completeness. Because the translators who've translated this word shunyata have translated it as emptiness, which implies nihilism. But more and more of the younger lamas are saying that's actually a very bad and misleading translation. It's as bad as suffering for dukkha. The way they say it is this, that the reality of our existence is completeness. In other words, it's the enlightened condition. And within the enlightened condition, there is nothing limited. There is nothing compromised. But when we buy into the notion of separate egocentric existence, we create a partial and limited version of reality in which we become trapped. So samsara is a partial and limited version of reality, limited by our view. Limited by our view that we are separate, egocentric. Therefore, everything becomes dualistic. Therefore, the field for conflict arises. Therefore, the field for suffering comes into being. That's how it all began. Now, when we free our minds through meditation or whatever from this fixated belief that we are separate egocentric entities, everything naturally opens up. Because fixation falls away, and what has always been there is experienced, and that is the inherent completeness that was always there. And in that completeness, there is a natural arising of compassion. It spontaneously arises, because what has been blocking it, like a dam across a river, is belief in egocentric identity. And a fixated locking into that belief. So that's like a dam. Blocks everything. When we release that, everything opens up. By itself. So that's the fourth.
Sorry, Rob. I don't know if you know Ken Holmes. I think he's a translator.
I do know him.
He gave a lecture at Randburg. And I just wanted your point of view on this. You know, like ego is a very fine word. He said, like, everybody's got an ego or an identity that you'll carry from life to life to life to life. So, you know, you have an individuality that you have to take care of, and I mean, you have to, you know, reach a certain level of self-awareness and, you know, work on yourself and stuff like that. You can't just say, you know, you're part of, you know, that you don't recognize yourself. How do you see that in terms of, you know, like Maslow?
No, I've understood your point. You've made your point.
And need, you know, also
I've understood you.
So it's different. Egocentric is clinging. But
that's why I use the word egocentric.
Okay.
You've never heard me talk about an ego.
No, I just want your idea.
Yeah. While we're locked into the idea of ego, we will be egocentric. All our training is designed to free us from that. Without condemning, without getting into the sense that there's anything wrong, because it's the way things are. But the important thing is to understand we can free ourselves from it. Okay. So forgiveness, atonement, resentment, four sources of compassion. I think there are probably more than four, aren't there?
Oh, I think they're a good start.
Yeah, they're a good start.
They keep me going for a while anyway.
Is that idea of completeness, is is that a way of reflecting on emptiness?
Yes.
Because I find that a very new idea and it's very, very deep.
Yes, you see, usually when people hear the word emptiness, it throws them. And they just have no way of relating to it. And then the nearest they get to is nothing, which is nihilism. And that's absolutely not what the Buddha was talking about at all. Whereas this phrase completeness, this term completeness, gives a much better sense because it pinpoints the fact that what we are actually experiencing at the moment is a limited, constricted and distorted version of what's really there.
So it's a kind of oneness, really.
Absolutely, yeah. Because when we're free of this, we're free of dualism, and therefore we experience and understand unity, oneness, non-separateness. But always remember when we enter this area that we're going to have a problem because we are moving beyond conceptual understanding. We're pushing the boundaries of conceptual into non-conceptual. Therefore, there comes a point when we can no longer talk about it because words will not convey the experience.
For my own sort of very basic understanding, but that last point about ego and egocentrism, and I'm sure this is what you've already said, but the problem is not that there's an ego, but the problem is putting the ego in the middle of everything.
100%. Okay. Total. Yeah. That's why I always use the word egocentric.
So, the enlightened beings, then, they're this kind of, I suppose because you can't conceptualize it, that's why it's really difficult, isn't
yes.
it? And then I just struggle so much because we live in a world which is so materialistic and bound by the conceptual mind that I might have a sense, non-conceptually, but because everything is kind of conditioned by beliefs and scientific kind of verification, I'm struggling so much with that.
I think this is something most of us in the West have. And this is why you may have noticed for the whole of this week that we've been together, I've been emphasizing over and over again, get to the experience, don't talk about it. Get to the experience. Because we need to bypass that whole conceptual, intellectual, rational, cognitive process. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but for exactly the reason you've just identified. It limits us, and we get stuck there. And when we're stuck there, we proceed on the basis that the only way forward is to work it all out. And as long as you're stuck in that paradigm, you're going to go around in circles, because it's still dualistic. So therefore, the solution is to leave it where it is, untouched, and move into experience, which is non-conceptual and direct. But then, of course, the problem is we don't want to go there. Because usually, if we move into experience, there's going to be pain. Or there's going to be something we don't want to feel. It may not even be pain. It may just be some form of discomfort. Therefore, there are huge barriers in our minds to moving into the realm of experience. So we're stuck. And that's why we've constructed this course the way we have. It's all to do with realizing you can get in touch with your experience. It is safe. It is okay. You do have the strength. There's nothing inherently wrong there. You can do it. But it takes time.
And I think a big part of our training is learning to be okay with not understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, and feeling the discomfort and the fear of not understanding. So, if, you know, when there's confusion and a lack of understanding, it's great.
You know, this is what a lot of people struggle with. It really is great when you become confused.
Yeah.
Because it shows that the cognitive, logical, rational structure has started to shake. And then you can let the whole thing collapse.
In a way, you do understand it, but you don't rationalize it. There's a different type of understanding that, it's not that you
You're right. It's closer to realization, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Experiential realization.
Which can't be rational.
Yeah. You probably will try for sure.
So, just following on the conversation you're having now about the fact that you function in a, you know, in a normal environment, that just seem in a work situation, etc., where not everybody has a compassion training and the levels of enlightenment and so on. So, what happens if you select situations in which you want to be compassionate? So for instance, previously you would handle the situation completely differently. I've been here for the past 4 years, and I have to say the training has certainly helped to recognize situations, or recognize situations in which I'm not compassionate. So I make a conscious effort to try and change that behavior. But it's very cognitive, the process is very cognitive. I'm thinking about it and trying to change the action. But what happens if you become selective about that process? So you do it more often, and it gives you a very nice feeling. But again, you know, is that selfishness, and is that to fulfill your self-need? It makes you feel good that you were compassionate in the situation. But you select, you know, you're compassionate 30% of the time, or 30% more than you were prior to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I think that's brilliant.
Changing, is that changing anything at all?
Sounds brilliant to me. Keep right on. What's wrong with it?
It almost seems selfish again. It's like you selecting.
It is selfish.
You choose to be compassionate.
It is selfish, but then you are selfish. But it's less selfish than you were before.
Yes.
So you've moved forward. And you can't expect yourself to attain perfection overnight. So I think what you're doing is brilliant. You say, okay, I can do 30% of the time. I'm getting a trade-off. I like it. Great stuff. But at least you're going forwards. And also you're honest. You're not kidding yourself. That's what we're trying to do.
And that's okay.
Sounds brilliant to me. I wish I could be like that.
Next year. 31%.
You know, do you see how quickly perfectionism comes into our thinking?
Oh yeah, this I know about myself.
Yeah.
And
the first stage of compassion is self-compassion. So, compassion for yourself. You're doing the best you can at this moment and in this context. Wow, man. What better than that? Don't look so distressed.
We can never have perfection, but sometimes we can see perfection in the imperfection.
Oh man, you're playing with words. Sunam di tamche zikpani topnye nyebe ranam pamche jega na chi bala chupali sipe sole roa roa.